We're now recording.
Thank you very much, Ricardo. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IRTBC call on the 17th of April 2012. On the call today, we have Alain Béranger, James Baudel, Michaela Nalem, Mikey O'Connor, Javier De Favre, Simonetta Batiger, Rob Mountain, Dykes, and Kevin Erdman. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs and myself, Natalie Peregrine. And we have apologies from Andy Graves, Matt Serlin, and Paul Diaz. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Natalie, and good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the IRTPC Working Group call for the 17th of April, 2012, and tax day here in the U.S. For those of you who are still procrastinating, you've got a few hours yet to get those done. As you can see in the right-hand column of the Adobe chat room, for those of you who are online, we've posted the agenda, and we have a few items here to cover. We have quite a number of small items that we need to check off today, and then we can move on to some of our larger topics as well. So first up, as per our normal procedure, does anyone have any questions, comments, or additions to the proposed agenda? Seeing none, the second question is, does anyone have any updates or modifications to their statements of interest? And no takers there as well. Thank you. And our first item of substance is a update from each of the two sub-teams. First one is the data gathering sub-team, which would normally be updated by Bob Mountain. However, Mr. Mountain has informed us that he has a really rough connection and has asked Marika to provide the update for that sub-team this week. So if you're ready, Marika, please go ahead.
Yes, this is Marika. So the survey that the data gathering sub-team developed went out last week. I think the several sub-team members sent it out to their respective contacts, but it also went out to the registrar stakeholder group as well as the registry stakeholder group who distributed it internally. And we also send it through an ICANN mailing list we have to all accredited registrars to get input. So the status today, we actually, I think we gave it as a deadline today for people to complete the survey. We've received a total of 56 responses, 52 of which were completed by registrars, two registries, and then there's also five that identified themselves as registrants and two aftermarket. And just to note, people could, you know, have multiple types of responses. So there are people that probably are registrars and also registrants, and registrars are also aftermarket providers. So overall, 56 responses, which I think is a really good turnout so far. There is a request, especially I think from the perspective of the registry stakeholder groups on representatives on this group, if they can maybe encourage their members to complete a few more responses, as we only have two at the moment, and I think it will be helpful, especially if you look at the IANA question, to get some additional input there from registries. I think the next steps for the sub-team are to, you know, once the survey closes tomorrow, I'll prepare a report on the feedback received, and then the sub-team is planning to meet next Monday to try and you know, analyze the results and then hopefully report back to the working group with its findings on next week's call.
And okay, thank you, Marika, for that update. And Simonetta and I, I think, are thinking the same thing, which is that if we're still waiting for a wider response from the registries and there's really no action to be taken on this survey results until next week, is there any harm in extending the deadline for a few days to give some more registries a chance to respond?
Listen, Rick, I mean, I think it's more a question of, you know, if are they planning to respond? Because if they indeed they are planning to respond, I don't think it's an issue to you know, give them a few more days, as it won't take that much time to prepare the report. But if at this stage we know there are not going to be any further responses, you know, I guess the sub-team could also take the time then to, you know, digest the results received to date. But at the same time, I could already prepare a preliminary report if needed. So that's, I think Bob already says that, he's happy to extend it till Friday. So maybe we can get a note out then to the different people we send it to, noting that it's we've extended the deadline. So hopefully people will take the time to provide some additional input.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Bob. I agree. And I think extending deadlines is certainly what we do at ICANN, especially recently. I see Roy would like to comment as a registry representative. Roy?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to echo that. In fact, on behalf of Newstar, I have not responded yet, and that's because I was doing a little bit more research with our technical team. So having a few extra days would be helpful. The other thing that I'll do is if once we know for sure that the window will be extended, I'll send another note to the chair of the registry stakeholder group, letting him know and make sure that he gets the word out to the rest of the registry stakeholder group.
Okay, thanks, Roy. So I think what we're hearing is that there's no harm in extending this a few more days through Friday, according to Bob's recommendation, and that the registries believe that at least one registry and possibly more could benefit from a few more days in terms of increased responses. So if there's no objection, let's go ahead and proceed with that then, extend that deadline, send a reminder out to a few of the folks that they have a few more days to get those in. Any other thoughts on the data gathering subteam update? Okay, thank you to Bob and Marika and the rest of the subteam for their work on this issue, and we'll move on to item number 4, which is the ideal process for change of control subteam, and our fearless leader in this regard is Simonetta. Simonetta, would you like to provide an update?
Sure, and I'm actually going to ask Mikey to help me with this a little bit. What we did last week is we started a draft of how this process could look like, and we captured a number of our thoughts and questions and open items along the way. So what you'll see here is basically the output of that work. And I can just walk you through this right quick, or maybe Mikey can help me do this as well. And we would love to hear some input and feedback from this group, maybe through the mailing list, or if you have an immediate reaction to it, then obviously on this call as well. But everyone should just know that this is Mikey and me, just two people sketching together a first draft, so obviously this isn't final, but it is taking into account what we have put together as our list of principles. And so what we thought the process should have is that at the beginning, both registrants authorize the change, and the sequence doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the previous or the new registrant does this first. It's just that both of them consent that there should be a change of owner on the domain. Then some entity determines that both the previous and the new registrant have given their consent to this, and this could be in the case of a thick registry, a registry function, and in the case of a thin registry, something the registrars need to do because they're the only entities who have knowledge about who the registrants are. Then the credentials for the transfer are produced and transmitted to the registry by the present registrant. And we had a longer discussion about this and stayed away from the word off code here because this, in essence, this credentials could be a PIN, a password, a string, a code, or something like an off code that when it's given is entitling the person who has possession of it to authorize a change of registrant. And there was a longer conversation Mikey and I had whether or not we should use the existing auth code for that or if this should be a separate and new thing. And I think there's pros and cons on either way to do this. So once the credentials are transmitted, are produced by the previous registrant and then transmitted to the new registrant, the new registrant enters these credentials to initiate the change of registrant. It changes over. And then both the previous and the new registrant get a notification that the change has indeed taken place. And again, we were talking about who should be giving this notification. in the case of a SIG registry, we thought the registry can do this because they know who was the previous and the new registrant were. And in the case of the FIN registries, it would again be the registrar's responsibility to do this. One thought that we had at the very beginning when we talked about this determination that's being made between both registrants that they have both authorized this is that we thought that if it's between two registrars, they should have this info back and forth and say, hey, this new registrant is saying that they want to authorize this here's the auth code, and the previous registrar would respond back and say, okay, and also the previous registrant has given the authorization to change the registrant over, and here are the details, so that both entities know who each other are. So that's kind of what we came up with as a first idea, and we'd love to hear your feedback.
Okay, thank you, Simonetta, and thank you, Mikey. I think that this is a great outline here of I think that it's very comprehensive and that it covers all of the things that we talked about in terms of what we call them, concepts or framework or whatever. I think that this is excellent. That there's probably a few more details here or there that need to be fleshed out, but I think this is certainly an excellent roadmap. So I'd like to open a queue then for comments on this update and this draft of an ideal process. Simonetta, go ahead.
The only addition I wanted to make to what I just said is that we had a conversation about the difference in character between a form of authorization and an auth code, and in our conversation, it became clear that those terms aren't clear. So I think one piece of homework we have to do is we need to define what we mean with this credential piece and whether or not an auth code is serving that purpose and in what way an FOA is different from that, because I had different ideas about this than Mikey had, and I think we would all be better off if we had a good definition of that.
Okay, thank you, Simonetta. I put myself in the queue. If there are no other questions, I wanted to ask a few. But first off, I would say that this is my question, this is capacity of a registrar. And I should note, full disclosure, that I missed the last sub-team call, so I apologize if this is something that's already been covered. But the question would be relative to the auth code. Are we suggesting that there would be a separate auth info code? So, for example, the existing auth info code would be called, just brainstorming here, would be called the transfer auth authorization code, and that this new one would be something new, like a registrant authorization code, and that the registry would not allow any updates to the registrant data unless that auth code was presented by the registrar, who was, and it would, I assume, have to be the registrar of records. So I'm just trying to think from EPP perspective how that plays out. Luna?
Yeah, and that was exactly where our conversation was going with this, and where Mikey thought that it should be a separate code because it does something differently, and he would like to therefore have this be a separate piece of information. And I said, well, if you look at what we meant with these credentials, that's exactly what an auth code is currently doing. So we are trying to understand whether my idea of that this is what an auth code is doing, basically being a PIN or password or string, that when it's given, entitles whoever has possession of it to change the registrant. If that is how it works, then we could use the same concept, and we don't have to ask for the registries to start using a separate and second credential information piece, but if that is not how it's used, then maybe it becomes necessary. And this is where both Mikey and I are really looking to this working group and the knowledge in the group, and maybe we have to reach out beyond this group to get an answer to that question.
Okay, that is an interesting concept, and I think that it is possible operationally to use the same code. You would just simply reset the code. It would be essentially a one-time password where whatever operation you were doing, whether you were changing control or changing transfers, that you would just reset that. It is an interesting concept. I think that where I start to get a little fuzzy is that currently only the sponsoring registrar of record can make this change, so they would have to be that entity would have to submit the code on behalf of whoever had it. And secondly, in the case of the FIC registries, I'm not really sure what their role would be in this, because they would accept the code and check it and say, yes, it's valid. But since they don't retain any contact data, that would be more of a that their role would end at that point. So I think this is really interesting, and I think that it has a lot of merit. We just need to flesh out some of these open questions. I think from my personal perspective, if we were designing a process from scratch on a blank piece of paper, this is exactly the direction we should be heading in. The challenge is to insert something like this into an active registry that someone like, and I know Barbara's not on the call, but someone like VeriSign might say, wow, we have to create new fields for, I don't know how many million domain names they're active. So I think that would be something that would be worth discussing with the registries further. Simonetta, go ahead. And anyone else who would like to comment on this, please weigh in as well.
I would like to actually maybe suggest that we take this idea also to the registries and ask for their input and information on and also the registrars to kind of like show this to them and say, hey, do you think something like this would work, and where would it break down? And I on this credential piece, I know that OSCODs currently are also not always used the same way by each registry, because I believe in the case of the .com, the OSCODE is set by the registry at the beginning of the life of the domain, versus in the case of the .de, for example, the OSCODE is only set once somebody is requesting a transfer, and it's basically doing exactly what the process design is asking for. And then this OSCODE is actually the piece that expires after, I want to say, 3 or 4 days, so that that provides this time-limiting security factor where the person who currently is the owner of the domain basically triggers the setting of this OSCODE, and then it's only valid for a little bit of time, and after that time it's no longer good for a transfer. So as you can see, even from this example, they're not uniformly used, which would be another reason why Mikey's idea to ask for a separate credential piece has some merit too. So those are just my thoughts, and we should ask for more input.
Okay. Michele, go ahead.
Just speaking to Simonetta's point about EPP codes, all GTLDs work the same way as far as I'm aware, in that the EPP code has to be provided at the same time as the domain name is registered. The .de or any CCTLD wouldn't be using pure standard EPP, so how they handle it unfortunately isn't that relevant. Thanks.
All right, Michele, thank you for that observation. Are there any other comments or questions relative to this draft process? I see that we have an empty queue. So what I would recommend as far as the next step, and I would ask for Simonetta or Mikey or anyone else to weigh in on this, is that we submit this then to the mailing list for comment, and that we then, for the next week, can we identify those loose ends or those open questions that you mentioned, Simonetta, and we can maybe find out who would be the most appropriate folks or experts that could weigh in on those open questions. Simonetta, go ahead.
I think the questions are already in the notes when you read on the right-hand side. Like, where, for example, behind the credentials are produced and transmitted, there's this thing that says choice. Who sets the outcodes, SIC registry versus SIN? And so the questions are already in these notes. The only piece that's missing is how are we going to get more information on these open questions?
And who do you believe would be the most appropriate? Would it be registries or registrars, both?
Probably we would need both of them to give us input because both of them would have a role in this, so they should tell us whether or not they believe something like this could work.
Okay. So maybe by next week we could discuss with Roy and Barbara, and I believe there's one other registry on the call, Paul Diaz, as well as some of the other registrars, if we can weigh in on this for Simonetta and give our thoughts to these open questions. Does that sound like a good next step, or are we missing something? Take silence as consent. Okay. Oh, well, thank you, Simonetta and Mikey, and thanks to the sub-team. There's quite a bit of work here. As we mentioned, this charter question is probably represents the majority of the work of this working group, this PDP, and the sub-team is, I think, carrying the lion's share of that burden. So thank you for presenting this. This is great stuff. Next up on the agenda is our state of play poll survey checkpoint. You know, whatever we want to call it, we definitely don't want to call it a vote. We definitely don't want to call it consensus because I think that it's way too informal to give it those sorts of designations. But it is, I think, useful to understand as we start to flesh out the structure of our initial report, we should have a good understanding, a good handle on where the group is somewhat aligned, where the group is somewhat split, which issues are controversial still and require additional work, and which issues maybe perhaps we're spending a lot of time on, but we're all just violently agreeing with each other. And I think that in the context of those questions, this is a useful tool. I reviewed some of the responses, and I was surprised that some of the issues were seemed fairly stable, and other issues that I thought were fairly innocuous were actually somewhat controversial. So let's take a few minutes to go through these survey results that we've received so far, and we will, if anyone has any thoughts, we'll just kind of discuss as we go along, and then at the end maybe we'll circle back and say what does it all mean in terms of the structure of our initial report and where we need to direct our efforts going forward. So the first question was regarding Charter Question A, change of control. And again, this is not a yes-no question. It's more of a which statement is closer to your position. As you can see, the group split roughly, those who responded split roughly 9-3 in favor of some uniform change of control function. And I think that those individuals probably would cite the PowerPoint presentation that we saw very early in our work that demonstrated or illustrated a lot of the confusion around this subject. So that's a fairly, fairly solid response. If we move down to question number two, however, we are completely split down the middle from respondents on this. Question two describes whether or not change of control should be a standalone policy or whether it should piggyback off of the existing IRTP policy, whether it should just be a component of an existing policy. And I think that we're seeing that the group, we need to discuss this issue and spend a little bit more time on the implications of both these choices. And, of course, we have a couple of folks who indicated that this is irrelevant because they don't believe that a change of control is necessary. The third question is on this notion of balancing security versus portability. I think the response here is indicative that the current process is perceived to be one that is fraught with vulnerabilities, and that there is an opportunity for this working group to enhance security without significantly diminishing the portability or liquidity of a domain name registration. Question four is, I believe, the final question relative to charter question A, which is who owns this process? Is it registries, because they will have visibility to both ends of the transactions, or is it the registrar who owns the relationship with the contact, both the old registrant and the new registrant? So this is interesting to me, is because this is another one of those questions that's split roughly down the middle of the working group, so I think that we need to spend a little bit more time on this and figure out what pieces of information we may be missing, or what open questions need to be resolved before we can say that we have achieved some degree, level of agreement on this. So any questions or comments on the first four items of the survey before we move on to charter question B? Okay. The queue is clear. Moving on to question number five, charter question B. This seems to be fairly solid, that there should be some limits on a form of authorization. I think that is less clear on whether that should be a long duration or a short duration, as we see from the next survey question here. It seems like the short duration, 30 to 60 days, represents closest statement for most of the participants, although a significant minority also thinks that, you know, a longer one should be considered. Question number seven, and the final question relative to charter question C, I was actually surprised at how closely this was split, just my own little personal observation, that I thought this was the least controversial of our charter questions, and it just goes to show you that PDPs are nothing if not surprising. But here we see that the position that registries should uniformly use ICANN IANA numbers to identify registrars is the choice of more of the respondents of the survey, but not much more, not significantly more. It's just it's a fairly significant minority believes that this is something that we should just let the registries and registrars work out for themselves. So this was an interesting exercise, I think, because it's identified some areas of work that remain. It's identified some things that perhaps we've spent some time on that, at least as it stands today, barring any new information, either from constituencies or public comments or anything presented in the workshops, it seems like we're coming down and come fairly solidly on one side or the other. Anyone have any thoughts, questions, concerns about this? Again, this is not meant to make any definitive declarations, as to where the working group is standing on these issues. It's mainly just a guidance to say we can proceed with this section of the report because it seems that we have reached some level of agreement on this. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted, on question six, I just want to note for the record, if there had been another option somewhat longer than 30 to 60 days, I might have checked that, but that was the time limit available, and the other one, till expiration of the domain name, that could be many years in some cases, so that was just way too long. But I don't think we should be bound strictly that 30 to 60 days. There might be a case to be made for somewhat longer but still limited period in regard to that question.
Okay, thank you, Phil. And as the author of these questions, I probably didn't do anyone any favors by including examples there of what was intended by short or long. I agree with you. There's probably a very significant gap between short and long, as the examples that were provided. But your point is taken. perhaps there's a middle ground there of 1 year, which is longer than 60 days, but less than those multi-year registrations. Simonetta, go ahead.
On that same item, I am wondering about what the if there wasn't a choice for what the registrant would like to do. So, for example, some registrants would potentially want to give monitor their FOA indefinitely, or a seller in the domain market might want to keep their authorization for a transfer open for as long as the domain is listed for sale. So I don't, and that's, again, it kind of goes into this open question, I think, that Mikey and I were talking about. What does an FOA actually do? What is the definition of it? How is that different from maybe some separate credential piece that might not be valid that long? And I think we need to think about that some more and actually come up with these definitions and provide clarity of what we really mean with this and what the function of it should be.
Thank you, Simonetta. I agree that we need some additional agreed definitions of what the FOA is doing versus like the Auth-Info code or some other token or credential that authorizes these changes. And I think that this question and this a number of items in the survey have been highlighted as areas where we need to spend a little bit more time and do a little bit more background preparation in order to ensure that they're effectively covered in our initial report. Because if anything here is an open question with this group, I think we can be fairly confident that when it goes out to a public comment or any kind of a workshop, that public will let us hear about that and we'll highlight those omissions. Mikey?
Thanks, James. It's Mikey. I just want to amplify what Simonetta said, also to commend Simonetta on a very good summary of our conversation and a very fair representation of it. Great job, Simonetta. But I think that these definitions of the FOA and the auth code may be right at the core of what we're doing, because it could be that simply by changing the definitions and clarifying them, we could address the issues in question A and B without disrupting the policy a whole lot at all. On the other hand, if the definitions go another way, then the policy is going to have to change quite a bit in order to accommodate those changes. And so unlike many working groups where, you know, we sort of say, yeah, we got to get us some definitions and stick them in an appendix at the end of the report, I think these two definitions are actually right in the mainstream of the work that we need to do. And so I just want to amplify what Simonetta was saying about the need for some background work by smart person or people to find out what the definitions of these things are now, where those definitions are stated, as the first step on what I think is really, really important stuff for the working group. So there you go. Thanks.
Thanks, Mikey. I put myself in the queue just to kind of add my voice to what you and Simonetta are saying. I think we need to get these nailed down. I don't know if that's something that we can work with ICANN staff to get better understanding of these terms or these concepts or where the answer lies. But I think you're correct that we need to get these, we make sure we're all level set at these definitions before we can dive into what to do with them. One thought that I had, at least off the cuff, was this idea that while an FOA is mentioned in the policy as specific authorization, auth info is, I believe, mentioned in terms of it's a conditional, okay? Like if you are using EPP to communicate with your registry, then you should use this auth info this way. So it's implies that there are other ways to communicate with the registry on a low volume basis, and that the auth info code would be optional at that point. I mean, I'm ending my statement with a question mark here because I don't know the answer, but it seems as though in that perspective that the FOA is a concept in the policy, and the auth info is maybe a part of the implementation of that authorization concept. But that's just me shooting from the hip. I think that before we proceed on some of these units that are absolutely correct, we need to nail down these definitions. Simonetta, go ahead.
My question is, if we, and it sounds like we all agree that it's important to get this definition done, how are we doing this? Is this work group asking the process sub-team to come up with a draft based on the understanding and thought that we have put into the current process definition? Or would this work group rather do this work in the quick group call? And I'm just trying to understand how we're going to get to this definition and when.
Well, that's a good point, Samantha. And I thought, you know, we could possibly put staff on the spot here a little bit, at least to get the ball rolling. I'm not saying that we're looking to them to solve this question for us, but at least to kind of get the ball rolling and say, what does policy staff or ICANN Legal believe these definitions of FOA and auth info code to be, and how do they play off of one another? Maybe that they can then also include the registry and registrar liaison groups in that discussion as well, or even the technical groups within ICANN. So what does the group feel about at least kicking this over initially to staff and asking for their first thoughts, and then whatever they come back with, naturally, as part of this working group, we would pick that apart, disassemble it, and put it back together in a way that this group favors. Any thoughts or concerns or objections on that? Okay, I don't see any red tick marks. I don't see any green ones either, so I think it's an indication that this is as good an idea as any, which in the absence of really a whole lot of...
McKaylee, yeah. And I ticked green, and it probably just isn't scrolling up on your screen. So,
yeah, I didn't see any green. Okay, so apologies to Marika, but we're going to probably put this initially on staff's shoulders and ask for them to weigh in on the concept of definitions between these two concepts and see if they can get that conversation started. And Marika has her hand up. Preferably, she's going to solve it for us right now. So go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I agree. I think this is probably more a question for the registrar liaison team, and I'm happy to take that back, although I do suspect that they're probably going to refer back to the language that is in the IRTP. I mean, there might be other places where this is defined, but I'm personally not aware of them. But I've posted that language as well on the right-hand side in the pod where it talks about auth info code and as well FOA. And this last paragraph that Simonetta has as well copied in the chat basically talks about the difference between the two, so that might already help a bit in distinguishing the two concepts. But I'm going to take the question back as well, and if there's anything further I can share, I'll definitely do so.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that there's really no wrong answer here. We're looking for staff to provide us with their thoughts. And I lost my whole window there.
Yes, I did that. I was just going to take my hand down, but I pushed the wrong button. So hold on.
So someone had raised their hand. I saw it just before it disappeared.
There we go.
Simonetta, go ahead, please.
I want to actually ask Mikey a question because, Mikey, you said if we define it this way, it would serve our purpose. Can you speak to that?
Mikey, I'm sorry.
I didn't hear the end of Simonetta's question.
Oh, I said you just said, well, if we were to define FOA this way and OSCode that way, it could solve what we're trying to look at. So I was just trying to understand if you could maybe just speak out loud what your thoughts were there.
I don't know that I had a specific thought. I was just thinking that if auth codes were, I'm inventing this, so I'm cautious. I don't want to invent that on the fly, Simonetta. I should really read these and see whether there's a way to bend these around. Because, just to replay what Simonetta was very ably describing, my concern about credentials is when it's unclear what the credentials are being used for, and thus credentials can be used for more than one function at a time. And if there was a definition that said an auth code is just a credential and it can be used for lots of different things, so that everybody's clear that it's just a credential and it's not necessarily got a meaning beyond that, then that credential can be plugged into lots of different processes in lots of different ways, but that also kind of implies that the credential has a pretty short life because it can change its meaning. That's a long, convoluted thing that I need to sort of stare at this language and cogitate a little bit about. Sorry to ramble so much.
I think we all benefit from your rambling, Mikey, and we all come away a little bit smarter. So let's try and put a button on this particular topic and note that we have identified an area of ambiguity, and we have asked ICANN staff, policy, but also working with some of the other groups to start the conversation by providing their take on the definitions and the interplay between AuthInfo and FOA. And we can then have a more substantive discussion next time around, or preferably on the mailing list, about what these things mean to us and how they impact our deal process, but as well as that, I think it also impacts the charter question B. So with that, I just wanted to ask if there's anyone else who would like to offer any general comments on this survey, and before we wrap up this area here and move on to the next item of our agenda. So any final thoughts? Okay, seeing that the queue is empty, we'll move on to agenda item number 6, which is a scheduled checkpoint in our work plan. And this is where we review the work plan that we've set out for ourselves and see how we're doing versus the schedule that we've established, and see if we need to pick up the pace or if there's any loose items that need to be accelerated. So looking at the work plan, it looks like we all have scroll control here, or at least I do. If we can scroll down, I believe it's on page 2, we see that we are on April 17th, which is about two-thirds of the way down to the second page. And at this point, we should be wrapping up our discussion of charter question A for our initial report and defining open issues if necessary. I think that we have with the draft process, I think that we have an outline of what an ideal process would look like, but we certainly have defined a number of open issues and that need to be continued to be addressed. looking forward a little bit, we see from next week, from the 24th of April through the 22nd of May, which is 5 working group calls, we are scheduled to be focused on deliberations on Charter Question B and Charter Question C while reviewing and constructing language relative to Charter Question A. And then that takes us right up to a review of an initial report on the 29th of May, and that can be released then for, we're looking at a publication deadline for Prague. And one of the questions that we discussed, I believe, a couple of calls ago was whether we wanted to release this report by the document deadline for Prague or come to Prague with this document in hand and some sort of present our initial report at that meeting. And I think, you know, without commenting too much on the remainder of the schedule between Prague and Toronto, it seems like that, you know, either are probably viable paths forward. It really kind of depends on how comfortable we are at the document deadline or whether we just feel that that's just too much of a rough product at that point. But I welcome your thoughts and comments on this. Aubrey?
Yes, thanks. I actually think that's one of the two concerns we should look at in terms of the report coming out. In terms of it, for example, with the report coming out, it's okay to list those issues where we think we're reaching consensus, those where there's still, you know, a split opinion, and then use the comments that we get from that to take it further. There can also be value, though, if we think that some sort of open discussion will help to frame those issues better so that the group can come to more closure before putting out the initial report. So I think one of the things is it's not only can we get something written, but is there value in using the meeting to see whether the face-to-face, more open discussion can help us come to closure on any of the issues that remain somewhat separated. And I think that's a decision that we'll have to take as we get sort of closer to that deadline, because it's certainly possible to put out the document and say, reach consensus on these, you know, have not reached consensus on those, strong support for the others, et cetera, and then use comments. But the more we can have an initial report with, you know, known levels of consensus, the better it is. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. And if I understood your comment correctly, I just have one follow-up question. So do you believe that there is a point here in between today and May 29th where we have to make that decision on whether or not we are going to choose the June 1st or we're going to bring those open questions to Prague? And do you feel like what do you feel is an appropriate time frame for making
that decision? I believe that the 15th and the 22nd of May meeting where we're reviewing the draft, we're reviewing where we got to, and it's at that point we can face the question of, you know, what do we think gives us a more complete initial report? Do we send it out now because we're in pretty good shape in terms of what we understand and what we don't, where we agree and what we don't, or do we think a face-to-face meeting with the public will move it further? If we look at where we are on the 15th and 22nd and say, you know, I really need more of a comment period to come to any closure on this, then we might as well put out the initial report. But if we think that the meeting can help us close some of the issues, then we shouldn't. And so I think it's a fairly easy, it's easy to say, decision procedure that we've got there is what's most beneficial. But I think that those 2 weeks, when we're actually reviewing what Marika was able to write based upon what we all said, is when we can make that determination.
Okay, thank you, Aubrey. And I would like to second that approach and identify those 2 weeks, the 15th and the 22nd, as kind of the stakes out in the ground, where when we hit those points, we have to make the decision of whether or not to release release what we have as far as an initial report by the document deadline, or proceed to the PROG meeting and introduce the report there. So perhaps, Marika, if you can capture that in our work plan. I see that Marika and Simonetta both have their hands raised, and I don't know who came first. So in those situations, I would ask that we defer to staff. And Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that for the PROG meeting planning, we've been requested to complete our meeting request by the 3rd of May. So that's already approaching very quickly. So, but at this stage, I don't think that requires the working group to already decide, you know, what it wants to do, whether it thinks it will publish its initial report or whether it thinks it will have, you know, just a general discussion there. But it just means I need to put a stake in the ground and, you know, request a meeting time and probably write, you know, in very general manner what the working group, you know, thinks it will be doing, but I can do that in general terms. And what we've done in the past is then just create a wiki page on which we can then post the more detailed information as we get closer to the date. So one thing the working group might want to think about is, you know, what date and what time would suit everyone best. Does the same time as we had in Costa Rica suit everyone? I think we had the Wednesday morning slot, and that's usually a time that is open for workshops or working group meetings. Alternatively, I think normally Thursday mornings are also open for those types of sessions. So if there's any kind of specific you know, input on that, you know, please let me know so I can take that into account when we complete our meeting forms.
Okay, thanks, Marika. And Aubrey has posted in the chat that perhaps similar to what I was thinking, perhaps that we need to secure that time slot, whether we present the data, the document, or not, just because regardless of whether it's been released or whether it's the first time we're bringing that document to the public, we can go over that document, and we can always use the time for face-to-face as well, similar to what we did in Costa Rica. So I think that in either case, securing the time slot on the PROG agenda is probably beneficial.
Yeah, and just Rick, I was going to ask a clarifying question, because I think Avery is actually talking about two different meetings, so one public meeting and one working group meeting. So it would be good as well to get, you know, confirmation and clarification on that, because that will require either, you know, requesting a longer slot, so it could be you know, that I request a slot of 2 hours, so where, you know, 1 hour is the working group meeting and 1 hour the public session, or two different meetings on different days and different times. So that's something that, you know, the working group might want to consider, you know, what it wants to do. And I see Mikey's asking an afternoon slot, but I think it's really hard because a lot of the afternoons are actually taken up by, you know, public forum, genus, or council meetings. So I'm afraid that might be challenging. But
yeah, we don't want to. Maybe if we got it really, really early in the morning, Mikey, you could just have a late night. So Simonetta has been waiting patiently, and then that will be our last comment for the day. So go ahead, Simonetta.
I have two questions. First question is, do we know what's currently missing for us to be able to produce the initial report? And if that list is known, are all these items planned to be addressed in our work plan? So I think that's something that maybe Marika and Afri and you can collaborate upon. And the second thought is, does it matter that we have good consensus on the items that we put in that initial draft, or should we just put out a draft and label it as such in any way, and it would then just be a matter of how do we and what type of information are we trying to get out of that PROG meeting? And the other thing that I thought was that we should definitely try to get on the registrar's stakeholder agenda for PROG so that we can be there and present information there, so there is no way they can tell us afterwards that we had no idea what kind of a process you're drafting here and when we should have given input.
Right. No, I think that that is definitely something we need to do, is get on the registrar's radar early and as early as possible and hit them with this topic as often as possible so that there are no surprises. Aubrey.
Yeah. On the consensus, I think it's important to try, and this is really the thankless task for the co-chairs, and Marika especially, but for the three of us, to try, and because one of the ways you know when you reach consensus is when you've stated this is where we think you are, and everybody shouts, oh, no, you don't, and you get to basically refine it until you say this is where we think we are, and everybody leaves it alone. So I think it's important to start taking those initial estimations in the initial report. It's also something that makes other people react. So in other words, for us to say the group seems to be arriving, you know, the group that's inside that box seems to be arriving at a consensus on this. If you just tell people that we're discussing option A and option B, they may go ho-hum. If you tell them that we're going towards consensus on option A, then that may raise their alarm flag. So I think it's really important as part of the progressive refinement in terms of finding rough consensus to, at an early stage, for the three of us to guess where it's at. And, of course, the poll is part of that. But to sort of guess where it's at, be brave enough to write it, and then have you all and everyone else say, no, 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 that can't be. And this is and that's how we get there. So thanks.
Okay, thank you, Aubrey. I agree with that. We'll probably need to wrap up for today. I think that to your point and to Simonetta's question, I think we're just now starting to identify those holes or those gaps, and we can then start to propose language to fill them, with the understanding that they're drafts and they're intended at this point to provoke a response. Okay, so thanks again, everyone, for your time and your for lending us your opinions and expertise. I think we are making solid progress, especially want to thank the sub-teams that are working in between the calls to fill out some of these open issues and, of course, identifying new ones. So thanks again, everybody, and we will see you on the same channel next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you, Ricardo. You may now stop the recording.